Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, December 18th, 2024. Reading the news this week from the Paxton City Council, paving the way. Additional liquor licenses made available upon request of group eyeing gas station Paxton. The Paxton City Council unanimously approved increasing the number of Class B and Class C liquor licenses in the city on Tuesday, December 10th, to accommodate the proposed redevelopment of the site of a shuttered car wash on the city's southwest side by Interstate 57. The availability of the additional liquor licenses, one more in each of two classifications, was requested by Paxton Commercial Investment Group, LLC, which plans to buy the former Paxton Auto Laundry and Lube Center property at 580 South Cherry Street and build a gas station there with a quick-serve restaurant. A Class C liquor license, if awarded to the gas station once built, would allow it to have video gambling terminals and sell and serve alcoholic beverages for consumption on the premises, while Class B license would allow for the sale of packaged liquor for off-site consumption. The number of liquor licenses available in the city by classification now totals 7 for Class B, 9 for Class C, 2 for Class D, 3 for Class E, and one each for classes CA, G, and CD1/CD2. Alderman approved raising by one the number of available Class B and Class C licenses after hearing from Paxton Commercial Investment Group representative H.P. Patel of Champaign. Patel said that he and the group of investors needed confirmation that liquor licenses would be available before they would decide to make the investment of buying the car wash property, demolishing the existing building, and constructing a new one. While Alderman eventually agreed to add the additional licenses, voting unanimously to do so, with Alderman Kristen Larson abstaining and Rob Pacey voting present, there were some reservations expressed. Larson, for example, said she was concerned about alcohol being consumed at the gas station by customers who would then get on Interstate 57 driving intoxicated. Pacey said he was more concerned about allowing more video gambling terminals in town, saying the issue deserves further study. Pacey also expressed concerns about a lack of detailed plans for the redevelopment project. Before adding licenses to accommodate the project, Pacey said he would prefer to see plans regarding the gas station's dimensions, lot coverage, setbacks, lighting, signage, and fencing, for example. Pacey said it was his understanding that such details would be forthcoming after the council voted 4-3 last July, with Mayor Bill Engel casting the deciding vote in the absence of two aldermen, to approve the rezoning of two grass lots immediately to the north of the car wash property from residential to commercial zoning classification to accommodate the project. "I'd like to see diagrams and plans that you would submit to the Planning Commission," Pacey told Patel. "I'd like to table it." Local property owner John Grove voiced a similar view. "I would want to know how big it's going to be, etc.," Grove told Alderman. "There's no diagram, no drawing. It seems to me there's a lot of questions here." Earlier in the meeting, Dell and Engel noted that plans for the project have changed since July. The mayor said he met Friday with Paxton Commercial Investment Group representatives to discuss the alternative plan, which Patel briefly outlined to the council. According to Patel, the new plan is to build a gas station only on the car wash lot, rather than building one on both that property and across the southernmost of the two lots immediately to the north of it. Due to space limitations, Patel noted that the gas station's convenience store, which would include a quick-serve restaurant, would be smaller than the 7,000-square-foot building originally proposed, and the gas station would no longer include charging stations for electric vehicles, as originally proposed. The other two lots to the north, at 552 and 560 South Cherry Street, would still be purchased and redeveloped by Paxton Commercial Investment Group, but for a different purpose, Dell said. All three lots involved are currently owned by Steve Elson. We have thought about several things for utilizing those two other lots, Patel said. We haven't come up with anything concrete, but we're definitely going to utilize them for commercial purposes, for sure. Patel said there were a couple of obstacles preventing the original plan from proceeding. Among them was the presence of utilities under the alleyway between the car wash lot and the two other lots, which would have required their relocation or modification. Quite frankly, what happened is when we looked at the utilities that are buried in that alley, it was determined that it would be very, very cost prohibitive to go out there and try to move those things and put a liner in that 8-inch sewer main out there. I think at this time it's not something that we nor the group wants to take on and do, so they've scaled down the plans a little bit, according to Ingold. One thing that has not changed, though, Patel said, is the developer's willingness to work with the city and neighbors to make the project acceptable to all. Our concern with the neighbors has not changed, Patel said, noting the development would abide by all ordinance regulations. That portion of it hasn't changed at all. We want to work with the city. We don't want to work against it. Plus the neighbors. They will also be our neighbors, so we want to work with them. We want to be part of the neighborhood. We want to invite them to our business. Despite the concerns expressed by Pacey and Larson, Alderman Mike Wilson said those issues were not relevant to the topic immediately before the council, whether to increase the number of liquor licenses available. We're not debating who's getting the liquor license. We're not debating any sort of building that's going to be opening at that site. We're way ahead of ourselves, I think, Wilson said. This is a very introductory step that we have to say, hey, we are willing to work with a potential entity. I don't want us to get too far ahead of ourselves. I guess the question here is, are we open to another liquor license in town or not? This isn't designed to get into the details on a potential gas station. Well said, Ingold replied. Alderman Eric Evans then motioned to approve the proposal to increase the number of licenses. This doesn't guarantee anybody's going to get them, Ingold noted after the unanimous vote. No redevelopment agreement has been proposed yet for the development, which is in the city's tax increment financing district. Now, a follow-up to a story that was read last week from the Ford County Board. Termination of farm lease averted with taxes, interest finally paid. Both installments paid weeks past deadlines. Paxton. The farmer leasing two Ford County-owned farms has paid the land's overdue property taxes plus interest fees and will be able to continue to farm the ground next year. Termination of the county's existing two-year cash rent lease agreement with farmer Nick Purcell for the farming of both the Ford County Nursing Home Farm in Patton Township and the Bowen Grider Farm in Button Township had been listed on the agenda of the county board's December 10th meeting. But the item was removed from the agenda after Purcell paid the taxes due as required by the lease. Previous Friday, the board's farm committee voted unanimously to recommend the board approve the termination of the lease if Purcell had not paid the past due property taxes for the land plus interest fees by Thursday, December 19th. Committee also voted 5-0 to recommend that to the board if Purcell's lease were to be terminated, approve seeking sealed bids for the cash rent leasing of both farms by other area farmers. The matter was also listed on the December 10th board meeting's agenda, but later removed. County Treasurer Grisha Whitcomb said Purcell paid both the first and second installments of the farm's property taxes several weeks past their respective due dates of August 9th and October 4th. Whitcomb said the first installments, plus interest paid, were paid October 4th, totaling $2,818 for the Bowen Grider Farm and $1,900 for the Ford County Nursing Home Farm, while the second installments, plus interest fees, were paid Monday, December 9th, totaling $2,869 and $1,938, respectively. And in another story from the County Board, Ford County Board considering adding County Administrator. Executive Executive Committee will study benefits and costs. Axton. The Ford County Board's new chairman, Chase McCall, pitched the idea Thursday of hiring a county administrator to perform some of the administrative tasks currently performed by department heads, allowing them to free up some of their time and the county to run more efficiently. McCall of Gibson City said discussions about the possibility of making such a hire will continue in upcoming months during meetings of the board's newly established executive committee, which will meet for the first time Thursday morning in the county courthouse's small courtroom. As the committee takes a deeper look into the topic, McCall said he plans to contact other counties in Illinois that utilize county administrators to request their job descriptions, which will then be reviewed by the committee to learn what other county administrators do and how we can maybe incorporate that into a future Ford County administrator role. On the surface, McCall said, it appears a county administrator could be beneficial. I know, for example, that County Clerk and Recorder Amy Frederick's office takes care of all the payroll and all of the human resources stuff for county employees, McCall said. With an administrator, Amy could offload that responsibility to the administrator. There may be other offices, too, like the Treasurer's Office or the Sheriff's Office or Supervisor of Assessment's Office that are doing jobs that are above and beyond their job descriptions as department heads. That could potentially be rolled into a county administrator job. Essentially, we're trying to make the courthouse run more efficiently. I think that's the overall goal here. And now another follow-up to a story from last week on alleged violations of the Illinois Open Meeting Act. Board members recite their votes for chair, vice chair to comply with law. Measure prompted by filing of request for review over, quote, secret, unquote, balloting. Paxton. In response to a request for review filed with the Illinois Attorney General's Office alleging the Ford County Board violated the Open Meeting Act when it elected its new chairman and vice chairman via so-called secret balloting, each of the 11 board members present at the board's December 10th meeting stated publicly, for the record, how they voted. Ford County State's Attorney Andrew Killian advised them to do so after John Kraft of Paris, Illinois, who runs the Edgar County Watchdogs website with Kirk Allen of Kansas, Illinois, filed a request for review with the Attorney General's Public Access Bureau on December 5th, 3 days after the 12-member board voted 8-4 during its biannual organizational meeting to elect District 3 board member Chase McCall of Gibson City as chairman and District 1 board member Carson Vaughn of Paxton as vice chairman. Each of the two elections was done through a ballot vote, as phrased on the meeting's agenda, where members wrote their selections on sheets of paper, which they then folded up and handed to County Clerk and Recorder Amy Frederick, who then opened them and read the results. Which board members voted for which nominees was not publicly disclosed or even known, as the sheets did not require the inclusion of the names of anyone but the choice of nominee. Kraft said such secret ballots have been unlawful for more than 90 years in Illinois, and asked that the Public Access Bureau direct the board to hold another organizational meeting to properly elect a county board chairman and vice chairman by voting in such a way as the public and media know how each county board member voted. After reviewing Kraft's request for review and applicable legal opinions, Killian advised the board to do a declaration of votes at its December 10th meeting stating how each board member voted in each of the 8-4 tallies. Killian said the declaration of votes would satisfy legal standards established 43 years ago when a judge in Ogle County suggested similar action to resolve a lawsuit filed by a local radio station over secret voting that occurred in electing a county board chairman there. We are not invalidating the vote. We are not invalidating any of the actions you have taken since the vote, Killian told the board. We have satisfied the Ogle County standard at this point. As disclosed, voting in favor of both McCall for chairman and Vaughn for vice chairman were in addition to the two nominees themselves, District 3's Randy Ferguson, Garrett Kerber, and Sarah Musman, all of Gibson City, District 2's Greg Newald of Rural Loda and District 1's Kelsey Vaughn of Paxton. Voting for District 2, Cindy Urquhart of Earl Roberts as chairman and then later as vice chairman were, in addition to Urquhart herself, District 1's Tom McGuinn of Rural Paxton and District 2 Leslie King of Piper City and Tom Nuss of Roberts. While District 1 board member Gene May of Paxton did not declare how he voted because he was absent on December 10th, he will do so at a future meeting. May was the eighth board member to have voted for McCall and Vaughn. Thank you to the Edgar County Watchdogs for bringing this to our attention, and Mr. Killian for his legal opinion, said McCall. We want to follow the law 100%. And now, another Open Meetings Act story, this time from Loda. Clerk orders phones, recorders off. Request for review alleging Loda officials' instructions illegal. Loda. Ford County Chronicle has filed a request for review with the Illinois Attorney General's Office alleging that Loda Village Clerk Regina Kasich, a candidate for village trustees in next April's election, violated the state's Open Meeting Act when she instructed trustees to turn off and put away all electronic devices, including phones and audio recording equipment, to start the village board's meeting December 11th. Under the Open Meetings Act, any person may record the proceedings at meetings by tape, film, or other means with government bodies able to prescribe reasonable rules to govern the right to make such recordings. However, the request for review filed Thursday by Ford County Chronicle publisher Will Brumlevy alleges that Kasich violated the law when she instructed trustees to turn off their electronic devices and remove them from view. The measure, Kasich said during the meeting, was to limit distractions. In giving the directive, Kasich mentioned by name two trustees, Sandy Coffey and Teresa Reck, who were recording the meeting. When Coffey, who was recording the meeting as a correspondent for the Ford County Chronicle, questioned the measure, Kasich told Coffey that she could need to choose whether you want to be a trustee or a reporter. An audio recording of the exchange was posted online Friday in a video on the Miles Revolution YouTube channel, operated by Village Treasurer Miles Reck. The video was posted to correct the record that only trustees were asked to turn off and put away their phones, not members of the public too, as earlier reported by the Ford County Chronicle based on Coffey's recollection. For question of privilege per Robert's Rules of Order, I request the board to shut off all electronic devices and put them away to not be a distraction, Kasich said in an audio clip. So any electronic devices need to be off of the desks, Teresa, Sandy, including the recorders. If it's a recorder, it has to be turned off. Village attorney Dale Stroh was present at the meeting but made no comment when Kasich gave the instructions. Stroh also did not immediately respond to an email message seeking comment. When reached Thursday, Kasich said she was instructed by other village officials to give the directive, which she said she was allowed by both village ordinance and Robert's Rules of Order. This is the third request for review filed by the Ford County Chronicle in the past 3 years, alleging violations of the Open Meeting Act by Loda Village officials. Just last month, the Attorney General's Office issued a non-binding opinion concluding the board violated the law by including the phrase "closed to the public" on some of its meeting agendas during the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020 and 2021. In April 2023, the board provided the Chronicle with the audio recording of an illegal closed session to settle a separate request for review. If the Attorney General's Office determines a violation of the Open Meetings Act occurred, it can issue a binding opinion requiring corrective action or a non-binding opinion recommending such action. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, December 18th. Henry Braemeyer, Cisna Park. Henry Wayne, H.W. Braemeyer, 89, of Cisna Park, died Sunday, December 15th, at his home surrounded by family. Visitation will be from 2 to 6 p.m. Sunday, December 22nd, at Knapp Funeral Home in Cisna Park, with an additional hour of visitation from 10 to 11 a.m., Monday, December 23rd, at St. John's Evangelical Lutheran Church at Ash Grove. Funeral services will follow at 11 a.m., with the Reverend Dale Fjordbotten officiating. Burial will take place at St. John's Lutheran Cemetery in Ash Grove. Memorials may be made to St. John's Evangelical Lutheran Church at Ash Grove, Iroquois Memorial Hospice, or an organization of the donor's choice. Stephen Garbasiak, and that is spelled G-A-R-B-A-C-I-A-K. Lake Iroquois. Stephen Daniel Garbasiak, Senior, 83, of Loda, died at 7:05 p.m. Monday, December 9th, in the Gibson Area Hospital in Gibson City. A Mass of Christian burial was held 1 p.m. Saturday, December 14th, at St. Joseph Catholic Church in Loda, with Father Nestor Sanchez officiating. Burial followed in Pine Ridge Cemetery in Loda. Memorials may be made to the American Cancer Society, the Alzheimer's Association, or Ronald McDonald House. Karen Mounts, in Gibson City. Sharon Mounts, 74, of Gibson City, died Friday, December 6th at Pikes Peak in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Funeral services were held Wednesday, December 18th at Rosenbaum Funeral Home, with the Reverend John Kuntz officiating. Burial followed in the Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City. Memorial contributions may be made to Brookstone Estates Activity Fund, the Gibson City Pentecostal Church Pantry, or Food Pantry, that is, or to the family. Doris Irene Punke, and that is spelled P-U-N-K-E, Gibson City. Doris Irene Punke, 89, of Gibson City, formerly of Elliott, died Wednesday, December 11th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services were held Thursday, December 19th at the Gibson City United Methodist Church, preceded by a visitation at 10 a.m. Burial followed at the Elliott Cemetery. Memorial donations may be made to the Gibson City Melvin Sibley School District's Music Department. Dennis E. Quinley, Gibson City. Dennis E. Quinley, 75, of Gibson City, died Monday, December 9th. A private family celebration of life will be held at a later date. Memorial contributions may be made to the Lee Lowry American Legion Post, the Gibson City Veterans of Foreign Wars Post, or St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. Mary A. Sanor, and that's spelled S-A-N-O-R, Thawville. Mary Annette Sanor, 63, of Thawville, died Sunday, December 8th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A memorial service will be scheduled at a later date. Bonnie L. Schneider, Paxton. Bonnie Lee Schneider, 79, of Paxton, died at 2:10 a.m. Sunday, December 15th at OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center in Urbana. Private services will be held. Memorials may be made to Gibson Area Hospital in Gibson City. Roger D. Schroeder, Piper City. Roger D. Schroeder, 55, of Piper City, died Sunday, December 8, 2024. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Memorials may be made to the Huntington's Disease Society of America. William R. Zbinden, and that's spelled Z-B-I-N-D-E-N. Cropsey. William R. Zbinden, 86, of Cropsey, formerly of Cisna Park, died Thursday, December 12th at Broman Medical Center in Normal, with his wife of 64 years, Corinne, by his side. Visitation will be from 9 to 10 a.m., Saturday, December 21st, at the Knapp Funeral Home in Cisna Park, followed by a funeral service at 10 a.m. at the funeral home, and then burial at the Cisna Park Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to the Cisna Park Education Fund, Cisna Park Bible Church, or Cisna Park Cemetery. We return to the news and we turn to the annual special section, All I Want for Christmas, headlined, Christmas is Coming. From the Paxton Post Office, postal worker delivering more than just the mail. Blanford spreading holiday cheer on his delivery route. Paxton, Christmas is coming up, which means more packages are being delivered. But one Paxton postal worker decides he wants to provide more than just mail. People may have seen him out on the roads before with his unique choice of uniform, but he's certainly hard to miss. Kevin Blanford has been working for the U.S. Postal Service in Paxton for 9 years. He retired from making watches and decided it was time to try something new. I thought, well, that's something I'd like to do, Blanford. I can love driving and I love meeting people. From the first interview he had at the Paxton Post Office, Blanford made a lasting impression. He walked in my door and he had on a three-piece suit, said Paxton Postmaster Tammy Lemley. When he walked in, I go, wow, are you applying for my job? And from that point on, I go, you know, I think I'm going to hire you just to see what comes next. Blanford got the job, but he said that's not his main purpose. My real job is to make people smile, Blanford said, and that's what I try to do. 7 years ago, Blanford started wearing ugly sweaters while delivering around 300 families on his route. I got a lot of response from that, got a lot of smiles, so those sweater collections grew and grew, Blanford said. He kept collecting until he had one for every day from Black Friday to Christmas. Now he's even added suits to the lineup. And I have a full Santa suit that I wear on Christmas Eve, Blanford said. One thing is for sure, the rural postman has gone above and beyond in his effort to make people smile. Best man I've ever had, said McMoynihan, a person on Blanford's route. He's always on time with the mail, and if we've got packages, he'll bring it up to the porch and takes good care of us. Blanford's praise doesn't just come from the residents he serves either. It comes from his co-workers. As a carrier and a human being, I think that love in the public has helped him excel with his position, Lemley said. Blanford also gets love back. He's received cookies, brownies, and other treats from the people he services. In the annual Ford County Chronicle special section on Christmas, they published letters to Santa from the schools. Here are a couple of them. Dear Santa, my name is Lucas. I am 6 years old. I have been trying my best. This year, I would like a VR headset. Thank you, Santa. Love, Lucas. Dear Santa, I have been very good this year. I helped my mom with the toothbrush. I really want Madden 25 and football cards. I also helped put my sister to bed. I wish my sister get what she wants. Sincerely, Harrison. Dear Santa, thank you for bringing me a Barbie last year. This year I want rollerblades. I wish that the homeless has a blessed Christmas. From Carly. Dear Santa, do you like chocolate chip cookies? I share with my brother. I tried to skip going to my dad's to have a girl's day. He should give me and my dad new covers so we do not fight over the covers. I want a LOL dollhouse. If he liked chocolate chip cookies, I would leave them out. Good luck. Love, Peyton. Dear Santa, I have been very good this year and nice. I help my friends and clean my room for my mom. I have a question for you. How do you come down the chimney? When you come visit me, I will leave you cookies and milk. Love, Gracie. P.S. I would love a Care Bear and Paw Patrol, and my sister wants a doll. And that's all the time we have for reading of this week's reading of the Ford County Chronicle. This is Tom Scott. On behalf of all of us here at the Illinois Radio Reader, I wish you a very Merry Christmas.